everybody, and welcome to another episode of Grounded. Piper, it's been a while since we've recorded an episode. How are you doing?
It's been a while. When was the last episode?
I don't even know.
We've been so busy. We've done one in 2025. I think we've done one,
but it feels like it's been a whole long time. I mean, we're already pretty far into spring, and you know, things are busy as ever, but how are things going on your end?
Things are good. You say we're in spring, but down here in Florida, it just hit summer this weekend. I'm planning a camping trip with the kids and packing everything up, and it's like high of 92 all weekend. And so then I'm getting calls from partners in South Dakota that are telling me, oh, the snow's on the ground. I'm like, man, that's a different
world. I was going to say, it snowed here like 2 days ago, and I think it's all gone now, but we'll see. We'll see if Mother Nature has some more in store.
Mind-bending.
All right. Well, to jump right into it, we have a very exciting guest for today. We have Cameron Norgate, a member of Earth Optics. Cam, how are you doing?
Good. Nice to be here, folks.
Happy to have you. Cam, could you tell us a little bit more about what you do here at Earth Optics and what your background is?
Sure, thanks. So I lead the product team here at Earth Optics, and that involves helping to define and build all of the technology, services, software and digital and otherwise tools that really power the outcomes for our farmers. So involved end-to-end into a lot of the things that we're done here.
Awesome. How did you end up here?
Yeah.
Well, so it's a long and winding story, but the short version of it is, if you recall, Pattern and Earth Optics merged last year, and I was one of the founders of Pattern Ag. So I've been involved in the kind of leading or cutting edge of science and agriculture for the better part of the last 15 years. Prior to founding Pattern Ag, I was over at Climate Field View with that organization. I was there for the Monsanto acquisition way back in the day, and then left around the time Bayer came in and took over Monsanto. So that's kind of the long history of my time in ag, but I've been working on various parts of digital and scientific developments for a good number of years.
Awesome. And obviously the subject of today's call is not Climate Field View, but everybody should generally be aware of Climate Field View. But could you give us like a one or two sentence summary of what it is and how important it was for agriculture when it first came out?
Yeah, this is a field view.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is back kind of around 2010. You know, we've had digital ag technologies for a long time, going back to the 90s with, you know, precision equipment in the field to know kind of where your equipment's moving and whatnot. And increasingly into the 2000s, we started to get more precise application of products in the field. But Climate Field View was a platform that was doing a number of both scientific and data collection services, and ultimately got acquired by Monsanto back around 2012 or 13. And became kind of the digital platform for that company at the time, working through their distribution with their farmers. So really, I think FieldView is effectively the one of the main ways that farmers are getting data off of their equipment today, and able to use that for decision making. So very powerful and important set of data layers coming through that platform, kind of comparable almost to my John Deere in terms of, I think, the footprint and scale of the data coming through. So I think of kind of those two systems as probably the big pipelines for kind of farm data of like what you planted, what you might have applied in season, and then what you took off at the end of the year with harvest. So obviously super critical set of data insights coming from that stuff. You know, when I was there, and this is probably kind of a bit to the founding story of Pattern, is like, despite all that information and data and analytics we had, we still had a very difficult time actually helping to understand why we got to certain yield outcomes in a field. And ultimately helping farmers to plan for the next season of what they should actually do differently. And so we felt like there were still a ton of kind of unanswered questions about what's going on in that soil environment before you go plant. And that's really kind of what was, I think, the impetus for us to go and start Pattern Ag back at the time. And very similar in some ways to the Earth Optics story as well, which is, how do we get a deeper insight into that soil environment so we can know what's going on and make an optimal set of decisions in the next season? So interesting kind of parallels in the journey of those two companies, and that ultimately kind of brought me here today working at Earth Optics and on the range of things that we've got going now. So very exciting.
Awesome. I know you feel pretty strongly about a lot of these different kind of, you know, agriculture related issues and you know, driving not only just yield per acre, but ROI per acre, but just kind of hearing it from you yourself, you know, what kind of keeps you up at night when it comes to agriculture? I mean, we're trying to solve some very big issues here. So what in your words is kind of like the key things we're driving towards?
I think it's just some of the insights we've learned over the years working on these problems here at Earth Optics. And maybe the biggest one is just that we've come such a long way in agriculture from where we were even 100 years ago with implementation of technologies in the field for efficiencies, crop chemistries, seed technology, all this stuff has yielded tremendous gains in yield. But there's still actually so much opportunity out there. And we see this through the data that we've generated across all the analysis we do on the millions of acres we touch now. We see these opportunities sitting out there because we can look at fields that have excess compaction versus ones that have amended that and see the yield differences literally on the yield monitor, and do the same thing with fertility. You know, we'll talk a bit later today about some very interesting fertility insights, both on the macronutrients and the micronutrients. And the same thing is true of biology. You know, we think maybe we've got a lot of these problems solved, but the truth is when you dig deeper and look at the data across a wide enough footprint, we see some really, really big opportunities to the tune of 20, 30, 40 bushels of yield potential sitting out there in the field. And so the truth is, like, you know, we've been doing the best we can to understand what is happening in a field and what decisions we should make next season. And a lot of that has been about kind of looking at the yield monitor, trying to assess from scouting, hey, what happened, what might have gone on here. But the truth is we can actually know with a lot of precision actually what is happening today in that field and not be guessing anymore. And knowing that allows us to really unlock that yield that I talked about. So that's kind of what keeps me up at night, is how do we both advance those analytics so we can more deeply understand what is actually happening? And then more importantly, how do we get that into the hands of the farmer so they can make the right set of decisions and take those actions to go get that next 10 or 20 bushels? And that's really kind of our main focus. And certainly what I think is going to be the exciting journey over the next kind of decade or so in ag.
We just peel back the level of detail on the individual field, right? And we can make these kind of data-driven insights about how farmers should treat that field. But then what you keyed on was that we actually have touched, you know, over a million acres, and we have these insights and we can kind of see these trends. And we have a really exciting thing that I think by the time you listen to this podcast will be actually in the hands of people all over, you know, the US. And so what is that thing, Cam? What are we about to put out into the world?
Perfect. Yes. Thanks for teeing that up, Piper. It is the Predictive Ag Report. And this will be the third year of publishing this particular document. You know, what this is effectively is taking all of that data from across the millions of acres that we touch and aggregating it up into kind of a very, very generalized view of what's happening across the Midwest. So we started this 3 years ago when we already were on a good footprint of acres and saying, hey, we've got some really unique and interesting insights. How do we communicate this to the field so folks can get a sense for what is available or what can be known and what might be happening in their region. And we kind of think of it, you know, the analogy we have for it is it's a bit like kind of the farmer's almanac, but on a forward-looking basis. So, you know, historically we had things like the farmer's almanac to understand what might have happened from a weather perspective in your region and whatnot. But we see this as really showing and identifying where are we seeing various pressures, whether they be on pests and pathogens throughout the Midwest. We look at what we call biofertility metrics as well. So metrics that indicate whether you may need additional phosphate solubilizers in your soil or help with nitrogen fixing bacteria to help with the access to those sort of nutrients. In addition, we've now added this year just looking at the core macro and micronutrients. So kind of looking across all of the different things that may impact crop outcomes in the next season. We have this data at large scale and we want to share, you know, what we're seeing, the big trends, the broad strokes. Where are the regions of the Midwest that are most at risk for a certain pest or pathogen? Where are the regions where there may be deficiencies in potassium or maybe sulfur or boron, things like that? So we can share that and kind of just raise the visibility and awareness that, hey, these things can be measured. We can know where they are. In fact, they're driving real outcomes on the farms that we work with. And we really think everyone should be thinking about this stuff much more.
Just to make it crystal clear, you know, this is, you said measured. It's like, this is all data that we've gone out, collected, analyzed. It's not like, oh, we heard from a customer that there was soybean cyst nematode in X fields, but we've tested it, we know exactly where it is. And so in the report, it's essentially a big summary of, you know, the year end worth of data. And you can even look at it, you know, in map formats to see where these different issues or biofertility metrics, which are, you know, generally things we want, where they're prevalent and where they're not, correct?
That's right. Yeah. And I would say it is a aggregate and anonymized view of this. So again, we take the privacy of our customer data very seriously as well. So this is kind of broad trends that we're seeing. No specific individual field necessarily being called out in this sort of insight and analysis. It's really looking across the Midwest. What are things looking like, you know, for central Indiana or Southwest Iowa? So things like that. But for each of the pests and pathogens that we cover in our analysis, each of the nutrient metrics that we cover, we've generated these maps of the Midwest. And, you know, that's kind of the meat of this publication, is the ability to go through and kind of flip through. And for any sort of metric that you might be interested in, you can see, hey, well, what does my area look like? What is the pressure for corn rootworm where I am? So should I be thinking about trait technology, or could I trait down? Or, you know, you mentioned soybean cyst nematode. What does it look like in my region? Has it gone up this year? Has it changed? You know, these sort of trends is what we're really tracking to help folks kind of understand what are the risks that might be going on in their area and whether they should be potentially testing and analyzing themselves. You know, things like tar spot, a new and emerging disease of corn. Well, where is that relative to your footprint? You know, because it's kind of growing, it's emerging kind of from that northern Illinois, kind of southern Wisconsin area. It's been kind of emanating out from there. So is it now starting to get into your neck of the woods? Is this something you should be scouting for or even protecting for with a crop protection foliar plan? So these are the sort of insights that we have throughout the report. And they can be really powerful to help you think about your plan for the next season and pull together kind of the optimal crop input set of decisions. The other thing that I think is really interesting and exciting is we've actually gone a step further this year and really teased out the distinction where or really where we're seeing a lot of that yield loss. So we call it undermanaged yield loss in the field. But for many of the pests and pathogens and fertility metrics that we track, we can actually identify just the average yield loss associated with a high risk level. So we characterize the risk levels of everything that we measure in our analytics. And when we see high risk for one of these things, we're actually seeing real meaningful yield impacts on those farms. And so we've now quantified that in the report as well. And that makes it a very actionable set of insights, because you can say not only, hey, does this area have high levels of fusarium, but by the way, when you have a high risk of fusarium in your field, you're actually at risk of 30 or 40 bushels of yield loss. And so we've got that data packaged into the report as well, which really helps us take it from, hey, this is interesting, to, wow, now I know what this means for me, and is a much more sort of actionable insight. So that's one of the big updates for this year that we're very excited to roll out as well.
I actually was one of the first things I noticed when I started paging through it was like that piece of data just highlighted on every page. Before we dig into it more, can you tell us where folks, I'm sure as they're listening, they're going to be wanting to pull this up, where they can find it and how they can access the report?
For sure. Yeah. So just head to www.earthoptics.com, and there will be a banner across that homepage to access it. You'll be able to go there and download your own copy and review all this great stuff for yourself and your region. So please go take that opportunity to check out the Predictive Ag Report on the website.
Yeah. And pull it up while you listen along. What surprised you the most about the report this year? Like, I'm sure there were many surprises, but what stood out?
You know, I kind of alluded to it, but that fusarium piece is a big one for me. So for those less familiar, fusarium is a very common soil-borne seedling and root rot. So it will kind of attack that plant in the early days in particular. So if you are planting into cold or wet soils, that plant or that seedling may have issues if there's a high level of fusarium, because that's kind of where it's at its weakest, most vulnerable moment. And that fusarium will get in there and get into the roots and really stunt the growth of that plant. So it's a known disease. It's basically in every field across the Midwest. But to some degree, we thought we had actually controlled that or managed that pretty well with things like seed treatments, which come standard in most seeds that you'll get today. But the truth is, when we looked at the data, this is a huge undermanaged risk. So what we're seeing is when we see a high risk field for fusarium, I alluded to that kind of 30, 40 bushel yield difference, this difference is real. And so we had actually seen that relationship last year, and it was in our predictive ag report last year. And we saw it again this year, maybe even in a stronger way. The added piece, and it's a really neat kind of one pager we have in the report this year, is a research study that's done this past year where we went to high risk fusarium fields and actually did studies around in-furrow chemistry. So applying additional protection through an in-furrow crop chemistry to protect that seed. And we did this for a wide range, I think 15 different chemistries to test out their efficacy. And we saw a kind of a range of 10 to 20 bushel yield bump from getting that in-furrow application in there to protect that seed in that high risk field. So it's kind of further validation that, hey, we're seeing these differences. Oh, and by the way, you can actually do something about it to go get that yield back, right? So that's, that for me was kind of the really powerful thing. And the thing we've added in this year's report is tying out things like that to both understand, hey, we're seeing material yield loss from this. And by the way, you can actually go protect against it and get that additional yield. And so I think most people are sleeping on things like fusarium because we feel like we've either addressed it or done the best we can. But the truth is actually there's more. And for what is effectively a very, very small cost of an additional in-furrow treatment that may be anywhere from $5 to $15 an acre, you can get back 10 bushels. That's a sort of trade-off that I think most folks would make any day. So very exciting to see a lot of the stuff kind of real world in the field translating from insights to outcomes for the farmers that we work with. And that's, again, what we kind of wake up every day and focus on, get really excited about.
Just for those of you who don't know, I've actually heard Cam say things like, I just have dreams about the results of these reports and I think about it all the time. And I think that is representative of our whole team's kind of passion for these results and how they can drive insights on field. Sorry to put you on blast, Cam, but I've seen that real passion behind the scenes. And so, you know, we don't just put these reports out for nothing. Like, there is a lot of passion and drive and behind them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I like that, you know, fusarium is an interesting, you know, topic to cover, but I mean, anything that's driving down yield, especially at a time where, you know, grain prices are obviously not the best, anything that's inhibiting yield is something that you really ought to be putting some attention towards. And you know, like fusarium and plenty of other kind of crop protection issues, there's plenty of things you can do to go after. You just need to know, where is it? Where are you actually having issues that are worth going after? Kind of staying on the crop protection side, is there anything else that either we thought was going to be a big issue this year and it ended up kind of being a flop, or anything kind of to the contrary, or anything else notable?
No, you know, the usual suspects are continue to show up. So rootworm is a big source of kind of undermanaged or unmanaged yield loss in corn. So that's obviously a big deal. You know, what I would say is I'm surprised perhaps by the impact of some of our biofertility metrics. So it's still staying on this kind of biology theme. But we're seeing that fields that are low in, say, like phosphate solubilizers in corn are seeing very material yield impact to the tune of like 15, 20 bushels. And it's affecting over half the fields that we touch. So this is one of those really interesting things because, you know, in the corn fields, we saw no major impact from having deficiencies in your macronutrients. So potassium, phosphorus, everyone had enough. That wasn't driving issues. But what actually was driving a difference for corn was if you did not have the phosphate solubilizers in your soil, that was driving a 20 bushel delta in your yield outcome. So again, it's you may think you've got all of the fertility you need down in that field, but unless you have the microbes there, the biology there to unlock that fertility and make it plant available, you're going to be losing that top end yield. And you may be sitting there kind of sleeping on that because, again, we've just never had this data. We've never had this sort of insights tied back to yield in the field. And I think that's really the power of this sort of a report, is being able to kind of tease those things out and show us just exactly really, you know, what are the things driving these differences. So that's a bit of my thoughts on the corn side. You know, on the soybean side, another kind of similar dynamic. One, I would say, is soybean brown stem rot really stuck out as a major source of yield loss, kind of undermanaged yield loss. So we typically think of like SCN, SDS, maybe white mold as the big hitters on soybeans. But what we found is soybean brown stem rot is one that is actually sitting out there driving a lot of yield loss that we maybe didn't know about. And that's in about a third of fields. Okay. And why it's also interesting is because oftentimes things like brown stem rot and some of the other diseases like stem canker, those can get mistaken for things like SDS. So oftentimes when you're out there scouting a soybean crop, it's very hard to know exactly what is causing the yield loss when you see a disease. And a lot of people attribute these things to something like SDS when it may be something else in the field. So again, this goes back to, hey, maybe there are things we don't understand about what's happening in our field that if we knew a bit better, we could make a different decision or change out our seed technology, you know, any number of things to protect against what might actually be the kind of elevated level of pressure or risk that we're seeing. So that's a little on the pest pathogen side. You know, one last thought on soybeans on the biological side, and this one's a bit of a surprise too, is that soybean nitrogen fixation is showing up as one of the kind of most common issues or sources of yield loss amongst our soybean fields. So what this means is, and this is to go back to kind of the soybeans, the Bradyrhizobium japonicum is that microbe that will partner with that soybean plant to provide it with the nitrogen it needs. And generally speaking, the conventional wisdom is if you've been growing soybeans in your field, you probably have enough of that microbe there. It's fine. Like, you know, when your plant gets planted, it will start to inoculate those roots and you'll get all the nitrogen that you need. What we're seeing is a 6 or 7 bushel yield difference in soybeans. So that's pretty material. That's about kind of 10 or 20% of yield, depending on where you are. It purely because you don't have enough of this particular microbe in your soil. So the levels matter. And this kind of goes back to kind of what we talked about with Fusarium. The levels really matter for whether you've actually got what you need. And it kind of makes intuitive sense. If that seed is planted in that soil and just the levels of those rhizobia are not as high, well, not as many of them are going to associate with those roots and be there to kind of facilitate and provide the nutrients that plant needs. And so it's going to fundamentally be resource constrained on the nitrogen side. And that's going to be a big issue for that plant. So it's one of those ones where we thought we had addressed that issue kind of as an industry, but what our data is showing us is that in fact, there's a huge opportunity sitting out there. So go make that $5 inoculant application. It's cheap insurance for your soybean crop. You need less than half a bushel of soybeans to go make up for that. And it's, you know, I think that's an easy, obvious opportunity when that comes up as high risk on our test. So just another sort of insight there on the biological side. With the soybeans too.
Any interesting insights on the chemistry side? You said that was a new addition to the report this year. You know, we've touched on biologicals. What about chemistry?
For sure. I am glad you asked that, Piper. You know, on the corn side and this one, again, these are all things I'm like, I'm super excited about because I'm like, wow, I didn't actually expect to see this, but boron is coming out as a 40 mm-hmm. or 50 bushel difference. When we see deficiency in boron. So this is one that I've kind of heard about anecdotally and seen over the years. And part of the problem with boron is it's in that micronutrient class. So not everyone is testing for it. Not everyone is thinking about it. If you want to go address it, it does usually take something like a foliar application in season to go address it. So you do have to be thinking about this and be willing to take action there. But what we're seeing is roughly a quarter of the fields we work with are considered high risk for boron deficiency. And when we see that, we're seeing a 40, 50 bushel yield difference in those fields.
So this is page 39, right? In the predictive ag report or somewhere around there. And it's crazy how big the area for high risk is just on the map. It's kind of inverse of what we're seeing on some of the others where you have smaller high risk areas, but this is like looking pretty widespread.
Yeah. And that's kind of true of a lot of the micronutrients as well, is that most of us, again, are kind of sleeping on the micronutrients is my broad-based opinion, because it's, you know, we've all been focused on NPK and getting our lime right, which is the right kind of sequence of events. But once you get those dialed in, you really need to think about these other micronutrients that are the kind of limiting factor now to that crop growth and potential. So we're just seeing a huge opportunity in boron with corn. The other one I would say, just jumping over to soybeans, and this one also kind of surprising, was seeing potassium show up as maybe the largest source of yield loss. So mm-hmm. fields that were deficient in potassium for soybeans saw a 14 bushel on average kind of differential. And that's not as surprising. We know soybeans is a hungry plant for potassium. It needs a good amount of that. But I think it's one of those insights that reinforces, hey, we thought we had this problem solved, or we think we're on top of potassium. It's something we test for often. But maybe we're really not actually addressing it as fully as we could or should be. And so just a big opportunity there, in particular with soybeans. So we didn't see that relationship as strongly in corn. You know, potassium showed up a little bit, but just not as often and not as big of an impact. So those are some of the things we're seeing on the nutrient side, but really exciting to see those insights kind of play through, because I've personally spoken to so many folks who have gotten benefit from things like those boron foliar applications, and we work so much with our farmers to make sure they've got the right levels of those macronutrients. Just seeing it here that some of these things remain issues for folks that are unaddressed is kind of a big opportunity that I think we can all go get together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels it almost seems to me like, when you're sick, but you don't know why, and you go to the doctor and you think it's like five different things, and you're kind of like, all right, look, doc, it's got to be one of these five things. And you get a blood test or whatever. And then they come back and they're like, surprise, it is something you never even thought of. Is that kind of what's going on here, where it's like there's all this yield loss, there's issues, and it's just kind of a very interesting surprise for like what the actual culprit is.
That's 100% right. What you just described, Gunnar, is a bit of how I think about it, which is a lot of times in ag, we're kind of maybe going to, our input provider or, one of our advisors, and kind of, again, guessing or shooting in the dark as to what might be happening in field A. We saw some yield loss here last year. It kind of looked like maybe it was sudden death syndrome, but we're not sure. Okay, well, let's go, would you go into a doctor and say, hey, I'm kind of feeling these symptoms, but then not go do the deeper test to understand what is actually happening? Probably not. You wouldn't want to go in, have them take a look at you, and then just prescribe a bunch of medications or prescribe some sort of surgical intervention. The idea here is we can really understand truly what's happening in that field and prescribe the right set of actions. Just the same as when you go to your doctor, you want to get a nice kind of write-up, full blood panel, understand what might be happening kind of inside your body. That's how we think about these fields. And really just exciting to see the data kind of applied in this case to really tease out what is actually driving some of these differences. Because, this is, I think, what everyone does, in the fall after harvest time, is kind of scratch your head looking at the yield maps and wondering why you got the outcomes that you did. And the truth is, a lot of these things are knowable and controllable. And that's, I think, the power of what we're able to do here with some of this.
Yeah. Gunnar, you use the analogy when you go to the doctor and you get a surprise result. But honestly, I think it's just as satisfying when you've done the Google deep dive, because you're pretty sure you could be the MD. And I can see that because I'm related to quite a few. But you show up and they go, oh, yeah, it was that thing you thought it was. So, I think we're doing that too, right? We're validating these kind of intuitive things that people think they have going on their fields, or they're like, maybe I should treat for this thing I think is going on. And then the data, I think it's just as exciting to see data that validates kind of your hunch. And so, yeah, we're uncovering surprises, but we're also validating kind of these anecdotes that Cam, you said you've been hearing all over the place.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. Knowing the plan you've got is the right one is equally as valuable, right? So you can keep doing that. Right.
Yeah,
definitely. Another piece I want to make sure we touch on is something that is also like, everybody knows it's a big issue, but it's generally always been hard to measure, and that's compaction. I mean, there's a whole page dedicated to soil compaction. Cam, can you kind of talk about the high level results there and what we're kind of seeing?
For sure. Yeah. So we put that up front in the report as one of the first pages, in part because I think of it, and we think of compaction almost as like a force multiplier, right? So not only is compaction, just to kind of step back and maybe zoom out for a second. Compaction, when you hit kind of 300 PSI, basically roots will stop growing through that soil. And so we measure compaction from the first inch down to the 18th inch, and that levels throughout that entire soil profile and across the field. And so we can know really, are you going to have issues with roots getting through that soil profile, accessing the nutrients, accessing the resources? That's why it matters, right? But I think of it fundamentally as this kind of force multiplier that, if you have compaction, all of the other issues that we talk about later in the report will become much bigger issues for you if you have the wrong type of season, right? So you could have a season, let's say you had a 6-inch kind of hard pan in your field, and you had a really good season. There was lots of moisture. There wasn't, a ton of pest and disease pressure. Your plants might actually be okay. They might do all right because they can get enough of that resource and nutrient in that top kind of 6 inches above that hard pan. But it's those years where maybe there's a bit more stress, whether it be, drought or something like that, and the plant can't get deeper in the soil profile to get at those additional nutrients, additional moisture. That's really where you're going to get hit hard. And that's also the type of season where, okay, now if there's disease pressure, you add that on, the plant's already weakened, its immune system is down, and then you're really going to have a bad year, right? So that's kind of how I think about the compaction piece. And we've seen, in the yield monitor data, just the relationship between compaction levels and yield impact in the field. And we think there's, you know, likely kind of a 10 or 20% yield differential if you really have unaddressed compaction. So very big opportunity, and the TrueTill technology from Earth Optics to be able to understand that with precision and go amend that compaction exactly where it sits in the field. That's a really unique and frankly, you know, I think never before available type of technology. So just one that we're really excited about. And I think it kind of tees everything up for, okay, you know, understand your compaction first, then let's go talk about everything else going on in the field.
Yeah. A standout moment on compaction this past season for me was just talking to one of our customers who, you know, took it out and trialed it on quite a few fields. And I think he had one of the growers say something like, you know, yeah, I only had to till half my field. And not only did you save me, you know, the money and gas, yeah, all that's great. And it, you know, it racked up, it was quite a bit, but he goes, you saved me 4 to 6 hours of my day. And that's priceless. Like, I got that time back. I didn't have to spend it doing tillage and like that alone, which was never a way I had looked at it. I always thought it's the fuel savings, it's the cost savings. But you know, yeah, it's your time savings too, because those hours are important. Everyone counts.
Right. And those were some of the customers who were like, hey, you just finished this field, can you go do these ones now too?
Yeah.
With that same sort of scenario. Yeah. So yeah. Very exciting. I've just been continually impressed with the TrueTill technology, and it's a layer that no one has really had before. And I think, you know, my experience has been when folks actually see that, well, they know what to do. Like, they've got the tillage implement, they can go out tomorrow and go address that. And that's really empowering too, to know like, hey, I know where my problem is now, I can go address it. And take care of that. So
yeah, it's one of my favorite layers to review, because people, it's intuitive. As soon as you kind of understand those different layers, people know the story. I mean, this is true with a lot of, you know, the things we look at in the field, but compaction in particular, like, oh yes, I drive here and I do this thing here on this field, and I know exactly why these, you know, spots, or maybe there's a surprise or two, but generally they resonate with kind of those results pretty instantly.
Definitely. Cam, you know, let's play role play for like 2 minutes here. Let's say I'm a farmer and I'm reading through this report and I'm in Southeast Minnesota. And so I'm kind of going through this and I'm seeing, for instance, like corn rootworm, pretty big issue in Southeast Minnesota. Should I start like freaking out, or what should I do here? Like how should I, as a grower or as an input seller or a seed dealer, you know, actually interpret this and kind of make some sort of actions off of it?
Yeah. So I would say, generally speaking, never freak out. You know, and the truth is, like, none of this stuff is like, oh, hey, it's going to wipe out my crop overnight. But you know, if you do make the wrong set of input decisions, it could have a pretty big impact, right? Now, like, let's use corn rootworm as the example. If you're in that Southeast Minnesota pocket, you're probably pretty familiar with corn rootworm as a pest, because that is a heavy corn on corn region. There's a lot of pressure there. That's why, you know, we see that showing up there every year, that, you know, the pressures kind of move a bit, but by and large, you're going to see something like that. So, you know, it's probably stuff that is more validating some of the experiences that you've had in the past, would be generally how I would frame things. But it is showing you kind of where things are sitting. So like tar spot, that's one where you may not have even known you had it or been in the hot spot for that. And it may be something you start to think about more with your foliar strategy. So that's how I would think about things. And then fundamentally, what this means for me when I look at this data is, well, if I'm in one of those regions that looks higher risk, maybe I should go get my field tested. Because the truth is, you know, in any given region, even those high regions of corn rootworm pressure, maybe only half the fields are coming back as truly high pressure. So there's a wide array of fields there that actually are not at a ton of risk because they don't have the eggs laid in that field. And so we work with a lot of farmers as well, some of them right in that heavy corn on corn region, who will use our tests to understand which fields are the lower risk ones, right? So they can then go plant a untraded or conventional or non-GMO seed into that field and do that with limited or low risk, because they know they don't have that rootworm pressure. So that's really how I would think about it, is, hey, this is additional data insights to understand what's happening. If you want to go deeper, the most impactful way will actually be to go measure those fields directly and get a field level measure, because the truth is, you know, we see anywhere from kind of 20 to 80% of fields impacted, but there's always going to be some that are low risk, some that are high risk, and truly, the only way to truly know is actually go out and test.
Awesome. Now, you know, I know where y'all have busy lives and probably got to run in about 13 minutes here. I'm scrolling to the end of the report here, and I'm seeing a couple other pages that are a little bit kind of, you know, on the outskirts of kind of your just agronomic insights. And so I'm seeing some testimonials. I'm seeing some stuff about carbon. What else is kind of in the report just that, you know, the readers should kind of make sure to tune into?
Yeah, great question. So we have a few other kind of one page, call it like a testimonial of, I mentioned that Fusarium study we had done. There's another in there looking at white mold. So those are some nice examples of just how folks have used some of our biological data to help with agronomic decisions. We've also highlighted some of the things we're doing in carbon. So for those who are familiar with Earth Optics, we have great depth in the carbon space, one of the largest soil measurement company in the States for carbon analysis. And so we've got a ton of experience in that space and wanted to highlight that in the report so folks are aware of just what's going on in the carbon space and what is the opportunity for the row crop and the rangeland or ranch acre as well. And the truth is there's really kind of $15, $20 per acre in potential value capture in exploring or being part of one of those carbon programs. And we can really help you think about what that strategy might look like and what's the right optimal plan, you know, for your farm or ranch. So that's another piece that's in there. We kind of highlight a bit of how those programs work, what it takes to get enrolled. But there's a ton of interest in that space as well. And we can certainly help you navigate, really how best to kind of monetize that opportunity for your farm too. So that's what we got there.
Awesome. You know, I think that my favorite part of the Predictive Ag Report is it's right at the bottom of page 50. It's a shout out of this very own podcast, which I was very excited to see. So make sure, you know, everybody has to definitely get to the very end of the report so they can see that. Cam, before we wrap up here, is there anything else that we should, you know, make sure to cover today?
No, I think that's it. You know, the Predictive Ag Report coming out very soon should already be, you know, hopefully in your hands by the time you're hearing this. Take a look through, and you know it can still be impactful for your planting decisions this spring, right? So we're just, you know, the planters are just starting to roll probably, and you can use this data to help with that seed placement decision, to think about those set of decisions. And certainly as we get into the season, we have a lot of foliar above ground pressure risks that you might want to think about as well that can help inform your scouting strategy. And ultimately your foliar applications and how you go protect that crop. So any way that we can help you to kind of have the best chance of success this next season, we'd love to do that. So please take a look at the report and hopefully we can help you out with that.
I'm excited to see it. Right. Well, Cam, thank you so much for joining us today on another episode of Grounded. Be sure to like, subscribe, share. What else? Like, subscribe, share. I think I got it all.
Leave a positive review, share it.
Well, you said share. I said share. And remember to stay grounded. Cool.